It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard. It's the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program and producer, and we have our full crew in. Gary Ed Keller here. We've got a person in studio with us who's going to help us to get a handle on what are digital heirlooms. Are you protecting them? Are you sure you can pass on those very important things that are now kind of intangible but very important digital assets? We're also going to be looking at rocking an arcade as well.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown here. As I said, co-host and producer, and along with me, my posse, that's Mr. Gary Baker. Good to have you here.
It's great to be back.
Yes, good to have you in studio. We got the full crew here. Eddie is here as well, Ed Rudell.
I always love coming into the show.
I do. Yeah, it's fun.
And Cal is in as well. He just stepped out for a moment, but Cal will be here to help us as well with our second hour in particular, as we have open our lines up to help you answer questions. By the way, folks, right off the bat, I got to say, and you'll find it on our homepage as well, there's a reminder for you that tomorrow, daylight savings time begins. I've lost track in recent years of when it's supposed to be starting, but it's tomorrow,
about 2 o'clock
in the morning.
Yep.
Yeah.
So best
tonight to spring forward, and we have a little reminder at the end of the show about that as well on our homepage. So please do that. And our program today, I'm really looking forward to this one because we're going to be exploring a theme that is, I think, a very important one, and is digital heirlooms. You might wonder, what's that? Actually, if you're listening to our program, you probably got quite a few of them. And we'll be talking about that. Professor Dan Hoops is with us from Walsh College. We'll be introducing him in just a moment. But guys, right now, I thought what we do is we bring Mr. Mike Brennan on board here. He's the editor of MI Tech News. And as we do every week, he's going to share a few of the headlines in MI Tech News. And then we'll tell you how you can get your free copy of all the headlines that he has to print there. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Foster.
Good to have you aboard.
Thank you.
Boy, this week, one of the headlines you looked at is kind of looking back and looking forward as well, and that's it. 2014, so far, is the worst year on record for malware.
Yeah, Panda Security said 75 million samples of malicious code were detected and eliminated in 2014, up from 30 million the previous year.
Wow.
But they also said 2015 will probably be worse.
So that was double... Last year was double 2013 then, roughly, right?
Yeah, more than double.
More than double, right. Yeah. Wow. And so this year, they say it's going to be even worse than that.
200,000 new malware strains detected daily.
Wow. And that's not including the phishing. We were talking, as a matter of fact, just before we went on the air, I got one that appeared to be from Microsoft this week, and it was so good that I clicked on it. Fortunately, didn't get far enough in to compromise any information because... As with all phishing attacks, it's based on social engineering, Gary.
That's right. It's the con man game, right?
Yep. And if we go for it, then they got us. And fortunately, I stopped. But Ed was pointing out beforehand, too, that if you're working on a phone or on a tablet, Eddie, you don't necessarily see where that URL is, where it's coming from.
Well, that's true. With a Mac or a PC, when you hover your mouse pointer over it, usually you could see the URL, and you could see it's not going to Microsoft.com.
Right.
But on a tablet or a phone, a smartphone, You don't have the ability to show
Well, and we all know that the user is the weakest link in that whole
system. That's exactly
right?
That's what they count on.
And they count on us being gullible.
And sometimes working very quickly, as I was, boom, boom, and all of a sudden I stopped at that second that second page, which was said, okay, now give us all your information.
Oh, you mean we have to read? No. We all have to read and pay attention to the URLs, the address bar at the top?
So, Mike, I guess the biggest thing for all of us in 2015 is pay attention.
My rule is if I'm not expecting it, I don't click on it. What I'll do is I will send an email back to the person saying, did you really send me this?
Very good point. All right. So even though 2015 is predicted to be double worse than 2014, and that was horrible, we all got the role of paying attention. By the way, there's another article in here that I found kind of interesting. Anyway, Apple's mobile payment system has been used to rack up fraudulent purchases. That's that new Apple Pay system, right?
Yeah, it isn't so much the Pay system. It's all the previous hacks with Home Depot, Target, and all the rest. They have all those credentials, and what the bad guys are doing is entering stolen credit card numbers into their phones and then using the phone to use Apple Pay to buy the products.
Yeah, and Cal, what made me angry about this thing initially was that it's kind of link bait in the sense that it's blaming Apple Pay. Some of them are blaming Apple Pay for this. It has nothing to do with Apple Pay.
A lot of times, it may not even be that they're blaming Apple Pay. It's just that when they rush to be with the media, be the first one to report, it's just Apple Pay sticks out, so it's the big target to go for.
But the banks are really the problem.
Yeah, the problem is the bad data.
It's the credit card system.
Which is very different, right? Yes.
They have access to data from the credit card system to do bad things on perfectly good systems.
That's it.
Now, by the way, what the other headline I saw on here, these are my neighbors. They're right across the street from me. Vectorform is creating a joint venture with DTE Energy to market energy audit app.
Like I said, there's an app for everything these days, and now you can have an app so that you can monitor the energy use in your home so you know if you're out of town and the kids are home, what they're up to, right?
If the midnight oil is burning a little bit too much, you can tell that they've had a few people over. I mentioned it because Vectorform literally is kitty-corner from me in downtown Royal Oak. And it's kind of interesting that MI Tech News talks about local companies as well as entrepreneurs. And if you're looking for venture capital out there, very often MI Tech News will bring that information to you about meetings that are coming up, networking opportunities. So MI Tech News is both hard news and it's a way for you as somebody who is interested in what's developing in business here in Michigan, or if you're an entrepreneur finding some resources, it's a great thing to have coming to your home every Friday. And that's what happens. Not just these headlines, but many, many more, including now you have the complete audio from our program, The Internet Advisor. We also have Digital Divas and IT and the D. Their podcast is there as well. Lots of resources. How much does it cost? Absolutely nothing. It only takes the time to go to internetadvisor.net, scroll down the page and click on that subscribe now button. And Mr. Mike Brennan's MI Tech News will be at your computer every Friday without fail. Mike, thanks so much for being with us again this week.
Good luck with that posse of yours.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, take care. Well, guys, I don't know if it's because I'm getting older.
That's true.
That is true. But I guess I'm now thinking about the things that, I'm going to pass on to my kids. And as a matter of fact, a few years ago, we were helped to set up our wills. And I'm ashamed to say I hadn't had a will until that time.
Very, very good idea.
We've got wills now.
Better ideas when you include me in your will.
There you go.
I'll take all the Apple stuff. No, I'm just kidding.
But as we're doing that, and this just recently, I was thinking about all of the digital assets that I have that I don't have in that will. They're just simply not part of what I think about when I think about what I'm leaving behind. And that's a terrible mistake. So we're trying to do something about that today. We have Dan Hoops with us in studio. He's an associate professor of accounting and taxation. He's been with us before. He's from Walsh College. Dan, thanks so much for coming on.
Well, thanks for letting me come back, you guys.
I'm delighted to have you here. I guess in particular because this whole issue of digital assets has, if anything, grown since we last talked. I mean, it's just almost exponential.
It's funny because I wrote a paper about this back in 2011, 2012.
No, wait, you're a professor, you're not supposed to write papers. It's your students that are supposed to write the papers, right?
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes we'll actually write a paper together, though. So.
I see. Okay.
No, but I'm just teasing. It's really, you know, this has really become a hot button issue across the board, and now mainstream estate planning attorneys are actually thinking about this because they're running into the same problems that we first ran into when this first became an issue, which was everybody does everything without paper. In the past, if someone passed away and you want to find out what some of the assets were, what bills needed to be paid, you would just wait for the mail for an entire month. Well, almost everything is done paperlessly.
Right.
And almost all of it's tied to some free email service because we're not supposed to be using our work email for these types of things. So we have to go in and find maybe a Gmail or a Yahoo or something. And the fact that you cannot access that without the password, you're locked out. And so it's a real liability issue for people.
Well, I was driving in, and I go like, oh, my God, Dan's going to be here. He can answer this question. This is so cool.
It better be an easy question.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be a piece of cake, baby. I'll softball you every time. So I, through the course of my life, decide to buy $10,000 worth of iTunes movies and songs. Can I will them to my kid?
No, you cannot.
Why?
Wow.
That doesn't mean that you might not be able to in the future. It's all tied back to the terms of service of your iTunes account.
Oh, okay.
Is that part of the problem, that the terms of service haven't caught up with this?
No, they're
no, they don't want it to caught up with you so you can go out and buy more.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah. As someone who's actually written terms of service for a few web-based companies, the terms of service are some of the best things if you're on the side of the web provider. Because
I got you
control everything. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is if
it's all such fine print, too.
Right, it's all fine print. And
that
I think
no one ever reads.
Including the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, who said, I've never read these.
Yeah, well, click and go.
Yeah, who does? And besides that, I want the program regardless. My friends all have it. I'm going to do it too. And reads them?
And therein lies the problem, is the fact that we just click I accept and don't realize that we're signing a contract. And Michigan, like every other state, has a state law that says clicking I accept on an electronic contract is binding. There's also a federal statute that says the same thing. So there are a couple of provisions in there that hurt us as estate planners and people who want to will their iTunes account. The first one is you're not allowed to assign your account to anyone, which means you can't transfer it to someone. So whether you're alive or you're dead, you can't assign it to anybody else.
But I could give my spouse my password, and my spouse could then get in and listen to the music, and right? It's a shared account.
Well, as an attorney, I can't tell you that that's something you should do, but that is what people do, because there's also a term of service that says that you're not allowed to do that. And if you do give your account password to someone else, you're actually violating the terms of service. They can cancel your account, and that's why as an attorney I cannot advise someone to break a contract.
So I think iTunes is probably safe in my particular situation because she can't hardly remember her own password, let alone mine.
Well, you better write them down.
Becomes an issue.
And I won't let her write them down for obvious reasons, right?
Okay.
So how do you deal with that?
We'll get to that in just a second. Cal, you want a follow-up?
Okay, let's try it from a different... And it's probably in the terms of the contract. So the same iTunes that I can't will off to someone else, am I allowed to go in and take all that music, download it, put it to disk, and then give it to someone else?
If the terms of service allow you to do that, you can do that.
Everything's in the terms.
And that's where it gets a little foggy and why it's kind of an interesting issue. It's also a frustrating issue because there's also a term that's always in all of the terms of service that say that we reserve the right to change the terms of service at any point in time. So you might be able to do it today.
It's the kind of contract you've never signed if you ever read it.
6 months from now, that term of service could be changed.
Yeah.
And you clicked, I accept, I agree to that, I'm fine with that. And so that's where you're stuck.
Wow. And it's becoming more and more of an issue as people are doing more and more things online as paperless society. There was an article that came out. Matter of fact, it just kind of hit me, was in England, a mother who had cancer decided in her last days that she had an iPad that she was going to pass on as part of her will. She was going to will it to her boys. And they decided that one of the sons would get it. And unfortunately, before she died before she gave the password. So they went into Apple and said, our mother has passed away, and she didn't give us a password. Could you please unlock this for us? We have the certificate of death. They went through all sorts of stuff. And in the end, Apple said no.
But they said no to the opening up her account and everything she had on it, but they were still allowed to receive the tangible property, which was
absolutely.
The iPad.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, which is, you know, I mean, Apple did the right thing. It's frustrating, but which is why you want to write down the passwords.
But let's say, for instance, she had some family pictures on there, the historic family pictures.
Doesn't matter.
You know.
Those heirlooms are gone, Foster.
Yeah.
Wow.
Once it crosses that threshold of madness inside that device, then it's up to you to control that device. And for the protection of you, as weird as it sounds, Apple says, no, we're not going to give this away to anybody else.
And some of this, we have to say, some of this has been done to protect people as well from identity thieves and things like that. Let's talk, before we, what I want to do is to talk about some of the practical things we can do. But before we get there, let's talk about what some of those digital assets are, because people may be saying, I don't know if I have any. What are some of the things typically that people
It's any sort of, I describe it as an electronic contract. So anything that you've gone online and you've clicked I accept, you essentially are creating data. It could be stored in a cloud. It could be actually stored on a particular device like this woman's, you know, iPad may have had. It's anything where you actually have content that you're going to save.
So we got like email.
Email, social media, blogs.
Social
iTunes
media would
accounts.
Mean like Facebook, Pinterest.
Well, let's just do it the easy way. Is there anything you can do online that doesn't require you to click I accept?
Pretty much nothing.
No.
So therefore, everything
but
is.
Here's where we really haven't, you know, we talk about the assets. Well, what about the debts? Because if you create, for example, you know, your my gas bill, for example, I pay it paperlessly, or it's automatically withdrawn. Mm-hmm. I click I accept on those terms of service. There's a term, and I read the terms of service because I'm a geek like that. But there was a term in there that said that I would not give my password to anybody else. So if I were to pass away and my family needed to figure out how are we going to pay his final bills, I think there would be, I think that, you know, consumers or whomever the provider is would be hard pressed to say, we're not going to give you access to this.
Yeah.
And we could probably get a final bill.
We couldn't contact them and say, please do not give us access to this. We don't want to pay that bill.
Right. Well, but that's why I'm saying, I mean, everybody's talking a little bit on the asset side, but there are the obligations. My mortgage, for example, is all withdrawn automatically from my bank account.
So. I got a good one. Okay. So
let me answer your question.
You're pretty excited here.
Here we go. Because, like, I've been looking forward to this one. This is great. So you just said about final billing and stuff like that. So if you're still getting a paper bill, then you have knowledge of what's going on, that sort of thing. But if you went to a no paper bill, like they want you to do, and they don't give you access, do you legally have to take care of it? Because you can't get to it.
Legally you do. And if you are the executor in Michigan, it's called the personal representative, you actually have a duty, a fiduciary duty, which means you can be held personally liable if you do not pay that particular bill.
Wow.
But where it gets even weirder is if...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say is the fact that when someone dies, you have to publish notice of their death, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you also have known creditors, you need to notify them yourself. If you don't have a paper bill, how do you know if they're a known creditor or not?
Exactly.
Oh, so that's like catch 22 on this whole thing. That's incredible.
I don't think I want the passwords. I'm just now deciding. I probably have more liabilities than assets.
We'll be back in just a moment with Professor Dan Hoops. We're going to find out some things we can do to pass things on. Well, guys, I don't know if it's because I'm getting older.
That's true.
That is true. But I guess I'm now thinking about the things that, you know, I'm going to pass on to my kids. And as a matter of fact, a few years ago, we were helped to set up our wills. And I'm ashamed to say I hadn't had a will until that time.
Very,
but
very good idea.
We've got wills now.
A better idea is when you include me in your will.
There you go.
I'll take all the Apple stuff. No, I'm just kidding.
But as we're doing that, and this just recently, I was thinking about all of the digital assets that I have that I don't have in that will. They're just simply not part of what I think about when I think about what I'm leaving behind. And that's a terrible mistake. So we're trying to do something about that today. We have Dan Hoops with us in studio. He's an associate professor of accounting and taxation. He's been with us before. He's from Walsh College. Dan, thanks so much for coming on.
Well, thanks for letting me come back, you guys.
I'm delighted to have you here. I guess in particular because this whole issue of digital assets has, if anything, grown since we last talked. I mean, it's just almost exponential.
It's funny because I wrote a paper about this back in 2011, 2012. And
no, wait, you're a professor, you're not supposed to write papers. It's your students that are supposed to write the papers, right?
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes we'll actually write a paper together, though. So.
I see. Okay.
No, but I'm just teasing. It's really, you know, this has really become a hot button issue across the board. And now mainstream estate planning attorneys are actually thinking about this because they're running into the same problems that we first ran into when this first became an issue, which was everybody does everything without paper. In the past, if someone passed away and you want to find out what some of the assets were, what bills needed to be paid, you would just wait for the mail for an entire month. Well, almost everything is done paperlessly.
Right.
And almost all of it's tied to some free email service because we're not supposed to be using our work email for these types of things. So we have to go in and find maybe a Gmail or a Yahoo or something. And the fact that you cannot access that without the password, you're locked out. And so it's a real liability issue for people.
Well, I was driving in, and I go like, oh, my God, Dan's going to be here. He can answer this question. This is so cool.
It better be an easy question.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be a piece of cake, baby. I'll softball you every time. So I, through the course of my life, decide to buy $10,000 worth of iTunes movies and songs. Can I will them to my kid?
No, you cannot.
Why?
Wow.
That doesn't mean that you might not be able to in the future. It's all tied back to the terms of service of your iTunes account.
Oh, okay.
Is that part of the problem, that the terms of service haven't caught up with this?
No,
they don't want it to caught up with you so you can go out and buy more.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah. As someone who's actually written terms of service for a few web-based companies, the terms of service are some of the best things if you're on the side of the web provider. Because
I got you
control everything. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is
it's all such fine print, too.
Right, it's all fine print. And
that
I think
no one ever reads.
Including the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, who said, I've never read these.
Yeah, click and go.
Yeah, who does? And besides that, I want the program regardless. My friends all have it. I'm going to do it too. And who reads them?
And right? Therein lies the problem is the fact that we just click I accept and don't realize that we're signing a contract. And Michigan, like every other state, has a state law that says clicking I accept on an electronic contract is binding. There's also a federal statute that says the same thing. So there are a couple of provisions in there that hurt us as estate planners and people who want to will their iTunes account. The first one is you're not allowed to assign your account to anyone, which means you can't transfer it to someone. So whether you're alive or you're dead, you can't assign it to anybody else.
But I could give my spouse my password, and my spouse could then get in and listen to the music, right? It's a shared account.
Well, as an attorney, I can't tell you that that's something you should do, but that is what people do, because there's also a term of service that says that you're not allowed to do that. And if you do give your account password to someone else, you're actually violating the terms of service. They can cancel your account. And that's why, as an attorney, I cannot advise someone to break a contract.
So I think iTunes is probably safe in my particular situation because she can't hardly remember her own password, let alone mine.
Well, you better write them down.
And I won't let her write them down for obvious reasons, right?
Okay.
So how do you deal with that?
We'll get to that in just a second. Cal, you want a follow-up?
Okay, let's try it from a different end. It's probably in the terms of the contract. So the same iTunes that I can't will off to someone else, am I allowed to go in and take all that music, download it, put it to disk, and then give it to someone else?
If the terms of service allow you to do that, you can do that.
Everything's in the terms.
And that's where it gets a little foggy and why it's kind of an interesting issue. It's also a frustrating issue because there's also a term that's always in all of the terms of service that say that we reserve the right to change the terms of service at any point in time. So you might be able to do it today.
It's the kind of contract you've never signed if you ever read it.
6 months from now, that term of service could be changed.
Yeah.
And you clicked, I accept, I agree to that, I'm fine with that. And so that's where you're stuck.
Wow. And it's becoming more and more of an issue as people are doing more and more things online as paperless society. There was an article that came out. Matter of fact, it just kind of hit me, was in England, a mother who had cancer decided in her last days that she had an iPad that she was going to pass on as part of her will. She was going to will it to her boys. And they decided that one of the sons would get it. And unfortunately, before she died before she gave the password. So they went into Apple and said, our mother has passed away, and she didn't give us a password. Could you please unlock this for us? We have the certificate of death. They went through all sorts of stuff. And in the end, Apple said no.
But they said no to the opening up her account and yes. everything she yes. had on it, but they were still allowed to receive the tangible property, which was
oh, absolutely.
The iPad.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, which is, you know, I mean, Apple did the right thing. It's frustrating, but which is why you want to write down the passwords.
But let's say, for instance, yeah, right. but let's say for instance, she had some family pictures on there, the historic family pictures.
Doesn't matter.
You know.
Those heirlooms are gone, Foster.
Yeah.
Wow.
Once it crosses that threshold of madness inside that device, then it's up to you to control that device. And for the protection of you, as weird as it sounds, Apple says, no, we're not going to give this away to anybody else.
And some of this, we have to say, some yeah. of this has been done to protect people as well from
right.
identity thieves and things like that. Let's talk, before we, what I want to do is to talk about some of the practical things we can do. But before we get there, let's talk about what some of those digital assets are, because people may be saying, I don't know if I have any. What are some of the things typically that people
It's any have sort of, I describe it as an electronic contract. So anything that you've gone online and you've clicked I accept, you essentially are creating
wow.
data. It could be stored in a cloud. It could be actually stored on a particular device like this woman's, you know, mm-hmm. iPad may have had. Mm-hmm. It's anything where you actually have content that you're going to save.
So we got like email.
Email, social media, blogs.
Social media would
accounts.
Mean like Facebook, Pinterest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's just do it the easy way. Is there anything you can do online that doesn't require you to click I accept?
Pretty much nothing.
No.
So therefore, everything is.
Here's where we really haven't, you know, we talk about the assets. Well, what about the debts? Because if you create, for example, you know, your my gas bill, for example, I pay it paperlessly, or it's
sure,
automatically
sure.
withdrawn.
Mm-hmm.
I click I accept on those terms of service. There's a term, and I read the terms of service because I'm a geek like that. But there was a term in there that said that I would not give my password to anybody else. So if I were to pass away and my family needed to figure out how are we going to pay his final bills,
right.
I think that, you know, consumers or whomever the provider is would be hard pressed to say, we're not going to give you access to this.
Yeah.
And we could probably get a final bill.
We couldn't contact them and say, please do not give us access to this. We don't want to pay that bill.
Right. Well, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, everybody's talking a little bit on the asset side, but there are the obligations. My mortgage, for example, is all withdrawn automatically from my bank account.
So. I got a good one. Okay. So
let me answer your question.
You're pretty excited here.
Here we go. Because, like, I've been looking forward to this one. This is great. So you just said about final billing and stuff like that. So if you're still getting a paper bill, then you have knowledge of what's going on, that sort of thing. But if you went to a no paper bill, like they want you to do,
mm-hmm.
and they don't give you access, do you legally have to take care of it? Because
yes.
you can't get to it.
Legally you do. And if you are the executor in Michigan, it's called the personal representative, you actually have a duty, a fiduciary duty, which means you can be held personally liable if you do not pay that particular bill.
Wow.
But where it gets even weirder, the fact that when someone dies, you have to publish notice of their death,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you also have known creditors, you need to notify them yourself. If you don't have a paper bill, how do you know if they're a known creditor or not?
Exactly.
Oh, so that's like catch 22 on this whole thing. That's incredible.
I don't think I want the passwords. I'm just now deciding. I probably have more liabilities than assets.
We'll be back in just a moment with Professor Dan Hoops. We're going to find out some things we can do to pass things on. In some ways, I think we kind of opened a can of worms that people's heads may be spinning about. Gee, what are my digital assets, and do I have rights to pass anything on? We have with us in studio Dan Hoops, who's an associate professor of accounting and taxation at Walsh College. Dan, so good to have you in.
Well, thank you.
You've been involved, as you said, in writing a lot of these terms of service, or in a couple of instances, so you know what you're talking about. That's, by the way, folks, the clicking on the button that says, I accept, which we've all done, and in so many places. Heaven knows what assets we have out there. But some of the things that I saw listed are that you might have, folks, as a digital asset, would it be email accounts, website domain names, social media like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram. I mean, you name it. Documents that are stored online.
That's right.
Like for instance, Dropbox.
Dropbox.
OneDrive, iCloud, you name Box. Online bank accounts. We talked about mortgage, utilities.
Once again, anything that you click accept on is
yeah.
part of it.
Now, the other thing, too, by the way, is Bitcoin.
Right.
Some of the virtual currencies.
Yeah, digital currencies.
Mm-hmm. PayPal accounts, iTunes accounts. You brought that up earlier. So there's a whole bunch of stuff out there. Dan, is there anything we can do to pass this on to our our family.
That's why I love you guys. You asked me the question that puts me in the box. There's the answer that I'm going to give you as the attorney.
There's
not a whole lot you can do. Okay.
All right. We'll start off with that.
Yeah, and the reason why I say as an attorney there's not a whole lot you can do because you have to follow the terms of service. And the terms of service can be changed at any point in time. And almost all of them will say you're not allowed to assign your assets to anyone. Now, some states do provide that you can designate someone as your digital administrator.
Okay.
And right now, these are such new statutes. In fact, the Uniform Commissioners is a group that proposes laws, did propose a statute for all states to adopt. And only 8 have adopted it right now. Michigan is not one of them. So if I advised you or a client, just write down your passwords and give them to everybody, I'm advising you to break these contracts.
I got you.
So, but for family members, I might say, well, you know, I'm concerned that we won't be able to access your email.
Well,
so make sure you write down or you keep your password somewhere where I can find it. And the reason why it's so important to understand that if you notify one of these service providers that someone is dead, they can do anything to that account. They can terminate the entire account. Yahoo for years would actually wipe your, erase everything in your account.
Ouch.
You know, some of them will just freeze it up, like Facebook will just freeze up your particular account. It could actually defeat
the
purpose.
They're beginning to deal with it, aren't they?
They are, and they've actually, and I was telling Cal off the air, they've actually changed their terms of service twice on this particular issue.
Yeah.
And so now they're providing, they're relaxing a little bit, but there's some things you cannot do. For example, you can't add new friends, you know, if someone passes away.
Obviously, yeah.
You can't delete anything from the account. So they're still kind of guarding things, but what I would tell my family members, not a client, make that clear, is to write down your passwords, and we would not notify any of these providers that this person died or that they were incapacitated. Because remember, this also applies in estate planning if you are incapacitated, you know, if you're in a coma or you're unavailable.
So, Dan, I have a problem.
Uh-oh.
So much of what I do today, especially all my photographs, are on my phone.
Yes.
And the way to get to my phone is use my thumbprint on my iPhone 6.
Why is that a problem? If you're dead, I'm just going to come to the funeral home and I'm cutting up.
So how do we deal with that one?
Grave robbing.
Go ahead, Cal. Correct him on that.
Because, go first.
Because I think when you select a thumbprint, that's only one option. You still have the ability to do a pin.
That's true.
Yeah, there's a pin as well that you can put
but
in.
But I like Dan's answer better.
I still like the idea of going to see Gary in that box with only 9 fingers.
Stop it.
Yeah, we would take the thumb.
No, wait a minute.
That's right.
How about this as, like, for instance, I've gone to using a password keeper, LastPass.
Sure.
Which has a vault. It's called a vault.
Right.
In which I have not only the passwords to all of my, and then the idea is that this one password guards all the rest of my passwords in the vault there. But it also has my credit card information and everything else that's really vital data is in there as well.
Right.
Now, I was just talking with my youngest daughter the other day, who, there are two of my daughters who probably will be in this position of being my executor. And, you know, I'm getting older and I have cancer. So I've got to think practically in terms of not just for me, but for my wife.
Sure.
Because she's not aware of those things there. Here, Molly or Lynn, my other daughter, here's my master password. It'll get you into the vault, and from there you can get to all the rest of the stuff.
And that's prudent. My only other suggestion on something like that, because there are several services that are doing that, my only concern would be you would definitely want to investigate whomever that service provider is. Will they notify the service provider that you have passed away? Will they do that? Because, again, you are giving access to your account to a third party, that particular digital locker, for example, but also whether or not that company stays in business. One of the issues we've run into with, you know, some cloud providers being offshore, not in the United States, is what happens if you get into a little contract dispute with them towards the end of your contract? Because quite frankly, they could just deny access to your cloud and they're in a different country. Whether or not that would really happen in a situation like this, it's probably remote, but, you know, I'm supposed to be the person who's supposed to be paranoid and thinking of every possibility that could go wrong. Those would be my concerns.
I love that, paid to be paranoid.
Okay, so just so I make sure I understand, from a lawyer's standpoint, a barrister, a solicitor, if I, in my estate planning, put all those passwords in and say my executor has authorization to use these passwords, they really don't, because the terms of contract don't allow to do it. But if you put them in there anyway to be convenient, and then tell them after you've gotten all the information you got out of it, you'll be okay.
That's what I would do for myself.
Okay.
I probably wouldn't put any of that into the actual will itself. Now, you could try to appoint someone as your digital administrator. Again, Michigan doesn't recognize that right now. But I would probably just keep a side list somewhere else, yeah, and just be with the family. And I'm not worried about somebody coming and stealing it. It's really, I don't want it to get published, because when you file a will with the probate court, it actually is published, and anybody can come in and look inside your account, and they'll see what your particular accounts are. Not your passwords, but just the fact that you have these particular digital assets, or someone might be trying to access those.
Mm. Could you specifically grant, let's say, one of my heirs to be access to those virtual assets? Could I, you know, one of my daughters, for instance?
That's what I've done with mine. I actually have a separate list, and I give everybody, you know, my power of attorney in the event I'm incapacitated, and then someone in my, you know, in my will will have the authority to actually go in. Because the other issue is, you might have somebody that's really good as far as managing the estate,
right,
but you might also have somebody who you might not want in your accounts. So, for example, you know, I might, you know, want to designate, if I were married, my wife is my personal representative. Do I want her to really go through and read my Facebook and my, you know, my private, you know, that type of thing? Well, those are real issues that have come up with clients.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know if I want, you know, my mother to read my emails or look at all my pictures.
Well, and you know, when you think about it, how much of that really matters to them? But they do want some digital assets, like photographs, family photographs.
Well, photographs, right? I think, is the biggest issue. Cal, he's jumping out of his skin.
You're killing me. This is like, it went from the internet advisor to the law show. Listen, what if I take all my stuff, and instead of putting it in my own name, I put it in a trust? Now, can a trust has officers, and then the trust is making the agreement?
The trust is actually the way to do it, because we call these living trusts, because they'll live after you've passed away. But the problem is, when you create, for example, a Gmail account or a Facebook account, are you really setting it up in the name of your trust, number one? And number two, do you want to give Facebook a copy of your trust when you set up your Facebook account? Because they'll need to see that you actually did prepare a trust. Now, you could do what's called a certificate of trust, which is, you know, kind of a you know, like a little memo, a short form that you did create the trust. But at the same time, I don't even know if they would allow you to do that. But is that it, would, you're onto something there.
Is it the bottom line here seems to be that we really are we're out in territory where there's no real good definition.
There's no good definitions.
And it's and what's happening is it's getting deeper all the time, because more and more stuff is in this digital world.
And that's the thing. And just to carry on the point about the trust, Michigan did propose, there was a Senate bill that was proposed where we were going to have access to digital assets in Michigan. Mm-hmm. But the problem was, when I read the bill, and this was over the summer, it was only for people who had a trust. Now, the problem with that would be, if I currently have a living trust that I've set up many years ago, if I want to put my accounts in the name of my trust, I actually have to assign it into my trust, which means I already violated the terms of service, because you're not allowed to assign it to anybody else. The second thing is, most people don't have a trust.
Right.
So it probably would have hit a very small percentage of people that
most
would
people don't have wills.
That's right. Most people don't even have a will, much less a trust. So it really was just kind of a silly statute. Michigan was the only state that passed this, and I remember reading it thinking, this is just, you know, more bad legislation. That, you know, we need good legislation, not bad legislation.
Dan, what are some? We're getting short on time here. Is there any practical suggestion you can give to people right now who are, you know, this is all brand new to them, or thinking about it? By the way, folks, if you go online to internetadvisor.net, there's a couple things there. Under Dan's smiling face there, you'll see Estate Planning with Digital Assets, which is a paper that you wrote a number of years ago. And then Protecting Your Digital Assets When You Die was an article that I want to refer to as well.
Mm-hmm.
Hang around.
Sure.
Okay? We're going to be talking briefly with some folks about a big party coming up with arcade games, the original arcade games. But Dan, I want to have you wrap things up and talk to me a little bit in a practical way, what people can do right now to protect those digital assets, and maybe some practical ways of passing it on to their heirs as well. Back in just a moment to talk about a digital arcade. I think I can safely say that everybody in this room loves the game. Some more than others are into the digital games. Well, there's a great party coming up, and it's going to be March the 19th. And it's going to be from 3 in the afternoon until 7 p.m. And we have somebody here to talk about a retro arcade game that's going to be going on. Sean, Fergus is with us from Online Tech. We're going to be talking about with Sean about a retro arcade game night. Tell me, first of all, what is a retro arcade game night in the first place?
So, retro arcade game night is, I guess, people of my generation, those that grew up in the 1980s with games like Ms. Pac-Man and Donkey Kong and Centipede, RoboCop, you name it.
Yeah.
Hubert. And it's really, I guess, really hard for me to believe that, you know, mid-80s are 30 years ago now. But I guess at this point, they are classic video arcade games, therefore retro. And we're going to have the real old-school games, the machines, at our data center, about 25 of them, on March 19th.
That's fantastic. This is going to be Online Tech. And is this in the Ann Arbor location?
No, it's actually going to be at Westland. So Detroit, at our newest data center.
They just opened that.
That's right, yeah.
It's a wonderful center. So, you know, when it said, you know, retro, I'm thinking Pinball Wizard style, and it's not that, right? You know, I don't get to shake the box and tilt or anything like that.
No, nothing like that. I would love to have the ability to shake those machines, because I've done the same thing myself and reset a few. but these are strict old school stand up arcade games, and you know, we're also going to make it a little bit more fun. We're going to have some craft brewing here, and specifically Michigan craft breweries, at least three of them, as part of the event. We're going to have some really good food, which I'm excited by. And also, there's going to be March Madness NCAA hoops on TV while people are networking.
Wow.
So just a really interesting event in a casual environment for people to network.
Great night. This is in particular for folks who are IT pros and are just people who want to find out more about online tech. It's a great night there. And again, that's going to be going on March the 19th from 3 to 7 p.m. And if you'd like more information about that, you can simply go to internetadvisor.net and click on the For More Information button, and then people can, when they go there, they find out things about getting some credits, is it, that you can get? Or tokens, pardon me.
Well, yeah, essentially, you can play every game you want. We'll see you along, because I'm sure there'll be some lines for some games, probably like Centipede and Galaga and Ms. Pac-Man, whereas others might not. I don't think it's like the 80s where you put your quarter down to kind of claim the next game.
I gotcha.
These are free to everybody.
I gotcha.
But registration is limited just because of the size of the data center, so people are interested in learning more about us and networking in a casual environment. I encourage them to sign up immediately.
Great.
Because, again, at a certain point, we're going to have to cut off registration.
I got you.
And Sean, that's really the value here, is networking with other people that are technically oriented. This is a fun event. But they're going to meet a number of people there that they may end up doing business with. They may end up getting them to help them on certain problems that they might have. So it's really kind of techie nirvana, isn't it?
It really is. It really is, Gary. And that's a great point. And that's why we like these sorts of events. And we do workshops and other things. And a lot of the value comes not from us necessarily having conversations with our prospects and customers and partners and vendors that come out, but with the prospects and vendors and those other people who do come, who are not from Online Tech, talking to each other, developing relationships that then extend beyond that event. We just recently had a workshop, and we had probably 15 different questions after the event in terms of, can I talk to, you know, Jim from this particular company
because he's
dealing with this problem that I'm having right now, or I'm looking for an auditor to come in. And boy, we talked to UHY, the company that Online Tech uses. Maybe I can develop a relationship with them.
Great for networking.
And Sean, the last time I was there, I got to meet Richard Anderson. He invited us, and I took a number of people from our company over to Kelly Services, and he talked to us all about their virtual call center and what they're doing for Apple. And Apple thinks that Kelly Services virtual call center is better. It's been rated better by Apple than their own internal call center. So we were quite fortunate, and it was all because of Online Tech.
So those kind of connections can be made at things like this. It's called Retro Arcade Game Night. And by the way, the openings are going kind of quickly. So if you know of somebody who is a tech IT pro or a business professional who is interested in this data center, It's online tech. It's their Westland location. But you can find out all the details about that by simply going to internetadvisor.net, clicking on the For More Information button, and then you can find out all you need to know about that evening. Sean, thanks so much for being with us, and I hope you have a great night.
Absolutely. You too. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
All right, my friend. Sean. Thank you. Take care of yourself.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Listen, guys, we're going to wrap things up very quickly here with Dan is with us, Dan Hoops, who's a professor at Walsh College. We've been talking about digital assets. I said, Dan, we wanted to do, before we leave, give people something practical they can do. And thank you for reminding me about this. On our website right now, right under Dan's smiling face, you'll see digital asset form. Let's talk about that.
Sure. I emailed you some forms that I put together for my sister. And as I said, these aren't something I can give to my clients because ethically I'm not allowed to help someone break a contract.
So by the way, when you go there in bold red letters, two paragraphs in
red. I don't want to hear from the Bar Association that I'm trying to get people to do that. Nevertheless.
Who put those up? I don't know of anybody that put them. That wasn't you, Dan, of course.
Oh, it wasn't me, no.
Yeah, okay. But they are good forms.
Yeah, these are, you know, and a lot of times what we'll do is planners, whether we're business planning or estate planning, one of the things we do is we have to think about the future and we have to also hope that maybe the law will change a little bit.
Right.
But for my sister, these made a lot of sense because we were able to identify whatever account she had. We were able to identify her passwords and it was written down, and that way we'd have something that we could access.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave those to you to show you this is how someone could do this if it were legal in Michigan to do so.
But it's kind of a way of gathering all that information together. That's what I liked about when I saw it.
And that's really what this is about. We need to make sure that people are gathering everything and putting it together because you do have a lot of people that just don't know where to even begin.
Right.
And so it is something that it's a problem. It's something that hopefully will get addressed by a legislator, and we'll have some more certainty hopefully very soon. But this is a starting point.
I'm curious.
And your
guys.
Sister could move to a different state that has better laws in this area too, right?
Yeah, she lives in Texas, and theirs are actually worse than ours.
Yeah. So,
oh boy. I'm curious, guys. How are you protecting your digital assets, Cal? Quick.
I have none.
Oh,
no,
get out of here. Just
actually, I don't really have any protection on it. But generally speaking, things that are stored in the cloud and stuff like that are things that I don't care if I lose because for two reasons. Number one, I don't put anything up there I really treasure or care about.
Okay.
And number two, I always back up things two different ways, one in the cloud and one on a physical device that's within my control.
So you've got something you can... Eddie, how about you?
No. Yeah.
Was it post-it note?
Yeah. If you could find the sticky notes with my passwords, you're welcome to them.
Gary.
The only thing that my family really cares about that I have, and it's because I take pictures on the phone and maybe video on the phone, some of those, and maybe the account to the YouTube videos of Justin and whatnot, and those are I just backed them up internally.
But those are heirlooms. Remember, we're looking at you need access to your assets, so your email is important.
And pictures is something I got to think about more because that is an heirloom too.
Right.
And I used LastPass, that password keeper, but in terms of pictures, I really have to start thinking about that.
Your pictures, you should be backing those up. But we need to know we have to get into your email. That's really critical.
Is it? Okay.
It is.
Well, then I have to figure that one out too.
Why is it so critical for the
because
email?
Because everything is tied back to your free email. Everything from those bank accounts, the utilities, everything. Lawyers, we need that.
Dan, thanks so much for being here with us. Lots of resources on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's Dan Hoops, who's a professor at Walsh College. Thanks so much again.
Thanks again for having me, guys.
Never have enough time with Dan here. Guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's going to be time for round two. In our second hour, we're going to be, of course, getting questions from you folks at 800-859-0957. Cal, Ed, Gary, we're ready to answer your questions coming up, hour two.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast.
Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host and producer of the program, and this is your hour. Frankly, folks, this is the part we love the most. That's when we get to talk to you. And you get to call us and ask us your questions about what's going on with your computer. See if we can find some solutions for you. Very simple. Get on the phone right now, toll free, anywhere you can hear my voice. 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. First come, first serve. I'm so glad you decided to join us here for the second hour of our program. This is the time when you get to set the agenda. You call us with your questions from anywhere you can hear the sound of my voice, 800-859-0957. And the rascals here in the studio are really fired up. Cal, in particular, is just kind of jumping out of his seat.
He's playing around with everything, right? He's like a kid.
That last program that with on the internet, on the digital assets, really got you going.
You have to remember, see, this live radio drives me nuts, and I love it to death. And you understand that I have times when I can't be here, so I gotta get it all out when I can.
That's right. Matter of fact, the rest of the month, I think you're going to be out.
I'll be watching really, really nice people on silver blades gliding across frozen water.
You know what's so interesting is that you got into this because of your daughter, right, who was involved.
Yes, I was a victim of a drive-by.
She's off to college doing other stuff. She's not actually participating anymore, but they still got you working, and you still like
He's a big cheese now, by the way.
Yeah. Figure skating is like a Roach Motel. You check in, but you can't check out. but it's a good time in.
I just think it's wonderful that you're staying involved.
Well, you know, someone did these things for my kid when she was young, and this is just my way of giving back to the sport. Plus, there's a lot of really fabulous people that are involved in it. You know something? If I could steal a hot second, because I should do this too, we lost a very, very good skater just recently, and he was an older guy. His name is Terry Jinks. He passed away this week, and we're going to miss him. He's been a very valuable asset to the Berkeley Royal Blaze Figure Skating Club, which is now New Edge, and just wanted to say we're sorry to lose him.
Yeah. Thank you. By the way, our number again is 800-859-0957. I'm going to get to Gloria from Ohio in just a second. Guys, I saw something this week. We were at our library in Royal Oak, and we have in the past told people a great place to go to get basic information about your computers, get answers to questions during the week, all week long, your library.
Yeah, because you can get on and they can help you. They can look over your shoulder and help you with things.
Right? Neat thing in Royal Oak, I was just looking at it this week, as I was sitting in the library, and Jenny was shopping for some used books, and I looked on, and they have one day of the week you can walk in, and for a couple hours, they're there to help people with their computers, to teach them how to use programs or even to solve problems, kind of like we do here. So it's really neat to see that libraries are out doing that. And you should check, folks, check with your local libraries. In the past, that's where I learned to use a computer. Mm-hmm. And they had the best computers around at that time. And I think probably is still the case.
So now it's Geek Squad with glasses.
All right, let's head out to our first caller, Gloria from Ohio. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
I have a problem.
Yes.
I don't know if there is a way to be able to clear all of my former passwords and sign-ons, whatever, and start from square one again. I am having a terrible time with the internet. I cannot get in to check my mail. And I did something very terrible. Some scammers called me.
Uh-oh.
And they said they were for Microsoft, right?
Oh, nuts.
Oh, yes. So they got a hold of my computer, and they hacked it, and hasn't worked well since, and I don't know if they still have control of it or not.
But have you had anybody look at it and remove some of the information that they may have put on?
Yeah, I had a guy who's a computer guy that works at a big company, and he cleared it all out.
Okay, good.
Okay. You had somebody, in other words, that came through that knew what they were doing and cleaned it up for you. Okay. All right. So let's see if we can get sort through the questions you've got. You were talking, one thing was you want to wipe all your passwords out and start over again. The other thing is you can't get into your email. Is that one of the problems?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So it sounds like, let's start with the email question. Can we start with that one first?
Yes.
Okay,
that's fine.
That sounds like a really key issue. You can't get into your email. Where is your email? Who have you got your email with?
Yahoo.
With Yahoo. Okay. And the issue is you can no longer get back in because somebody, spoofed your password? Somebody stole your identity? Is that the issue?
I'm not quite sure whether that is it or not. But, you know, Yahoo, when you can't get in, you can go into a help thing and you go through all the steps.
Yes.
And I did all of that, but I still cannot you know, access.
Okay. Well, hang on there, Gloria. Eddie, you have some thoughts.
Well, I was going to say, first of all, I wanted to make sure that you did know your old password, because one of the things that happens when someone cleans up your computer is they delete your internet settings and you're cached, and so all your saved passwords are removed. So, of course, when you try to go to yahoo.com and log into your email, you have to type in your email address and your password. And you knew
you're aware of that, right?
So I just wanted to make sure that you knew your password, you attempted to use it, and it failed. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. So you've attempted to use Yahoo's password change routine, and it probably failed as well. And this is one thing that our other listeners should be careful about. Is you know, a lot of people, if you've had your email accounts for 5 years or more, and you haven't changed your password, and Dan mentioned this, a lot of the usage. Internet usage policies have changed. So it's good to change your password at least, oh my gosh, at least once or twice a year.
Yep.
And maybe even more frequently, because what happens is that if it's been 5 years since you changed your password, when you do change your password, Yahoo or Microsoft Hotmail will go through and say something like, you know, you have to change your password. Would you like to type in a mobile phone number so that we can call you back and send you a password? Or would you like to provide an alternate password or answer secret questions and answers? Because, if you've had this for a long time, you probably never filled out that information. And that's why it's failing.
All right, Gloria, here's what we're going to do. On. We're going to put you on hold. And we're going to do some noodling behind the scenes, and we'll get back to you, okay? Mark from Detroit will be with you in just a moment talking about securing your network. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. Let me give you the phone number again to get you involved. 800-859-0957. You know, if you're driving along and you've kind of never had a chance to ask anybody a question you have about your computer, this is a great time to do it. We've got some really experienced techs in here with Ed and Cal and Gary, who have been involved in computers for a long time. For Ed and Cal, it's their daily bread and butter. They both work at General Motors, where they work with executives there and the email accounts and all sorts of other things with the networks. And they both have been involved for many, many years. Cal, in particular, knows a lot about Apple. So if you've got some questions in that world.
I'm more of a pear man myself.
We're not going to touch that one.
All right.
And you better not either.
800-859-0957. Give us a call, and you've got the rest of the hour here to get in with us. Gloria, we're going to go back to you for just a quick thing here.
Sure.
You have an error message that you said you have that appears when you try to get in. Let's hear what that error message is and see if that gives the guys here any other indications of what might be going on. Go ahead.
Okay, it said HTTP 500 internal server error.
Mm-hmm.
Means that the website you are visiting had a server problem which prevented the web page from displaying. I was trying to use the Yahoo sign in.
Okay. That was what you get with that. Okay.
Well, have you got more than one web browser on your PC? Like, as an example, if you're using Internet Explorer, do you have Google's Chrome and you could potentially use that to try to sign into your email? Or if you have Firefox or even
Firefox, I do have.
Okay.
Yeah. I would try an alternate web browser. But the other thing is because she said she switched from AT&T. Which provided a Yahoo Mail account, and she switched to a Time Warner.
Mm-hmm.
Does the mail accounts stay with Yahoo at that point? So she would have been given a Time Warner.
No, the Yahoo account is going to be out there. It's just going to hang there.
Oh, okay.
Because when AT&T let that go, you still were able to hold on to the Yahoo account, even with the old AT&T address.
Okay.
So she can't get to the Yahoo website, right?
Well, the other thing I was thinking about she might want to do is have her reset Internet Explorer. So it clears out all the cache and all the stuff that's in there. And they even suggested on the Yahoo Help website.
How do you do that, Cal? How do you reset Internet Explorer?
I don't use IE.
Internet Explorer, you select Tools, Internet Options, or, you know, the little gear on Internet Explorer, the more recent ones, and then you select Internet Options.
Okay.
And then you go to the far right-hand tab under Advanced Settings.
Okay, and then Advanced Settings,
Hang on, she's trying to do it while we
talk. And then you have the reset. There's a reset button on
there.
Basically, it says reset Internet Explorer to all default conditions.
Right.
I didn't bring that up because she said she had a tech that she had come to her, and he probably would have done this.
But if he did some other things, it might be better just to make sure that it's set to default.
Right.
Right. So now, that you can reset the Internet Explorer. The other thing, Gloria, is that you can...
Well, I also want to suggest that you download and install Malwarebytes.
There you go.
Because one thing that can happen is if you have a bad toolbar or a corrupted toolbar in Internet Explorer, and that's why I suggested using a different web browser, that you could be redirected as far as your search engines. So when she's trying to log into Yahoo underneath a secured login, HTTPS, then it's failing because it's trying to, a piece of malicious software or a broken piece of malicious software is trying to redirect her somewhere else. Right. So it's failing at that point. That's why she's getting the error message. So she might want to try her Firefox browser or Google Chrome or even download Google Chrome as a fresh install.
Or she could take an uninstall Internet Explorer, and then when she comes back in, it will reinstall, right?
So there's a, there's a number of things you can do when you get
And there's a big bag of tricks to get.
So Gloria, try some of those other options and see if they help you as well. Okay, thank you so much for giving us a call.
And if the person that helped you originally, if they could finish the job and make sure that she could get back in, that would also help because he'll be there right with the computer at the time and help her out and do it for her.
Right, he's probably seen this error and he goes, "Oh, I know what that is." Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, our number again, 800-859-0957. Hey, it's your turn to ask a question and get on, like Mark. From Detroit. Hi, Mark. How you doing? And
hi,
how can
how
we
doing?
Help you?
I have a question for you. I heard you talk last week about the guest account on the wireless router.
Oh, yes.
And I was wondering if there was a way to secure the guest account on the wireless router because I'm finding from time to time I'll log on to my wireless router and three or four computers that I don't know anything about have access to the computer, but when I close down the guest account, they don't have access anymore.
Are you talking about your wireless router? You newer ones have the ability to set up a guest. All you have to do is turn it off then if you don't want people to have a guest account. You could have neighbors.
Or it could be, can't he secure the guest account too?
You know, I'm not.
That's what I'm asking, because all the information I'm reading seems to suggest that you cannot secure the guest account.
And that's what I'm thinking. I don't think you can. I mean, the whole reason to have it, what you could do is that you can turn down the maximum throughput on some routers like the Linksys, the Cisco Linksys. You could say, I'm giving them only 1 meg download.
Well, so my Linksys, I have it protected.
You really?
My guest account is password protected. I give that password out to my guests. I don't give them my password.
Oh, that's good to know, Gary.
To the
even if I had the password protected, I mean, even if I I changed the password.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm still getting unauthorized users on the guest account. So that's why I'm asking if you can secure it.
Well, I mean, if you're setting a password on it, it is secured. So I don't know what they're attaching to.
Are you seeing a log that said unauthorized users had been trying to attach?
No, what I'm seeing is I'll go into what they call Cisco Connect, and it'll say things like, you have two computers logged onto your system.
Well,
but that's not onto your guest account, though, right? That's onto
That is onto the guest account, because when I disable the guest account, I don't get that message anymore.
Okay. So you should be able to go into your Cisco Administrator's panel, and you should be able to go in and set a password for that guest account.
Yeah.
And once you do that, that'll keep them from getting in there.
And that's what Gary said.
And I would suggest it being a different password than the one you use for you and your family. And that way, when guests come over and want to use the account, you give them the guest password.
Thanks, Gary, because I left mine open, and I wasn't sure if you had the ability to lock it
down. It sounds like, Mark, you live in an area where you're in a neighborhood, right, with a bunch of people?
Oh, I'm in a neighborhood. I'm in a local neighborhood in Detroit.
And, Ed, you're out in a rural area where you don't have that many people around, right?
Oh, yeah, that's why I leave it open.
Like, for instance, I'm in an apartment building, and there are probably almost 20 signals out there above me, below me, and around me that can could tap in. So it becomes an issue when you're in a crowded, more urban area.
So either you have to go look at the manual that came with your router or go to Cisco's website, which is probably better, and put in your model of your router, and they probably have a complete procedure on how to do that. The other thing you might want to do for fun is go to YouTube
put in your router model in there and say how to configure, and you might even be able to find YouTube that'll walk you through on that.
Yeah, it's really nice to be able to look at it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, Mark, one of the things we've been telling people, by the way, is that if you want some information about getting problems solved, going to YouTube is a great way to do it, whether it's working on your car or your washing machine or your computer.
I mean, more and more manufacturers are actually producing the YouTube videos and putting them out there.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah, it's an excellent way to get help.
And some of us are very visually oriented, and it really helps us.
Well, now, the visually oriented thing wouldn't help me because I'm a blind user.
Okay.
So you may get value out of some of them anyway, but there's some others that you may not get as much value out of.
That's a good point.
Thank you so much.
That's a good point. Hey, thank you very much for giving us a call, Mark. Good to have you with us.
All right, no problem.
All right. And by the way, Wes, one of the neat things that we have found over the years, Gary, as you and I have been on these 17-some-odd years now, is that so many of visually impaired out there use radio as a way of keeping in touch with the rest of the world. It's just such a neat experience and quite an honor in many ways that we've been able to help our visually handicapped
and
listeners.
And they use JAWS and some other screen readers that allow them to use the internet, which really just broadens their horizons in ways that they couldn't do it without the internet. So, wonderful way to help the visually impaired.
Absolutely. Hey, whatever your challenge is out there, there's a phone number right now that's wide open for you, 800-859-0957. What's your problem? What's your concern? What's been giving you fits with your computer? Getting on the internet, getting around, or simply getting over what you find there? Give us a call, 800-859-0957. The lines are open for you. Glad you guys could be with us here. And by the way, if you're driving along or maybe you've just been listening and thinking, I have a question to ask, but I feel kind of foolish asking that question. Our motto here is the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. And so often when people ask questions they may think are kind of silly or small or basic, they're helping a whole lot of other people as well.
They're helping us, too, because we can answer those kinds of questions, probably.
I just brought both my kids back from college last week, and the first thing they did is like, Dad, I can't print. I'm like, I got a new printer, guys. don't you know how to set up a printer? And they didn't.
There you go. That's the kind of thing we can help you with today. And the neat thing about that is you have to go into any shop. You can just pick up the phone. Yeah. And we got some great people here with lots of experience to help. 800-859-0957.
Well, Monday is going to be a special day because the maniac that sits behind me at work has been like chomping at the bit crazy about that new Apple Watch.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yes. By the way, I'm glad you mentioned
that. It's expensive, but boy.
Well, we'll find out.
Apple. It's only money, right? The guy's got Apple has $170 billion in cash.
So they don't need mine. They should make this cheaper. I can afford a couple $100.
But. You would think so. You think they just go out in the hall where all those bags of money are laying and go like, oh, Gary, here's a watch.
By the way, Cal, on our homepage, if you go to internetadvisor.net, you'll see I have a link there that you can click on if you want to follow the release, the live release on Monday. It'll take you. It's by CNET. They will be following that release. It's going to start at, I think, probably like 1 o'clock. What is it? In Pacific time, I think it's, 9 o'clock?
That would
Pacific
be 10.
Time?
10 what o'clock.
Time? Is it 10 o'clock?
Well, 3 hours difference, right? 10 o'clock.
Okay.
If it's 1 o'clock here.
Daylight savings it's be time.
I think it's noon then. Noon then in California. Be starting.
Just click on
Anyway, just click on it.
3 o'clock here.
Click on it, and what it'll do is it'll set something in your calendar that'll allow you to come back and be there for that.
The other thing that they're rumoring that might be announced too is a new 12-inch MacBook Air with a Retina display. Well, that's what I'm more interested in.
Yeah, they've been actually saying that it now looks like that's going to happen later because of just being able to get enough of the screens.
Yeah, they may announce it, but it won't be available later.
Yep.
But it's all rumor and speculation, folks. We know nothing.
All right, 800-859-0957. Let's quickly, by the way, you can go to internetadvisor.net and we have the link there for that. So you can, I'm going to be watching it myself or paying attention closely to it.
I'm going
to
be completely ignoring it.
William is with us from Westland. William, how can we help you? What's your question, William?
Yes, sir. I'm trying to see if you all know about a program that can help people with disabilities that live alone, where if they can have purchase a computer that can help them spell out the words in the emails, write out the emails, and email it out.
Okay,
have like learner disabilities and stuff like that.
Oh, that is a very interesting question. So you're looking for something, a program that can help people with learning disabilities to be able
yes,
to
sir.
Use?
far as a computer that they can use from home when they're trying to start a small business at their home.
Very good question.
So Windows has what they call accessibility options.
Yep.
And if you're not completely blind but visually impaired, you can make the type font larger.
Mm-hmm.
They can read it. You can be able to use your voice to actually input information.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of other. Use the alt tags. We're a very good website. We'll have not only the image for most of the visually oriented people to be able to see the image, but then an alternative tag for anybody that's visually impaired.
Now, William, excuse me, you're talking about a learning disability rather than a physical disability?
Yeah.
Learning disability, not blind disability.
I got
you. Spelling disability.
Right.
So spell check is part of it. Have you used, Outlook as a? I mean, there's a couple different parts of the Microsoft.
Do you have a computer right now, William?
Family of products.
No, sir.
I think what he's looking for is a computer.
I'm looking for one because I want to do this.
And there's a number of order. Business. There's a number of organizations that donate computers for that purpose. I mean, we had that one. Who's the is it the ministers, the monks?
Steve
Steve Beck.
Steve Beck, who
works. Rehabs them and sends them to computers. I want to suggest something different, William.
Okay.
And here, let me try this, William. I was going to talk about this, but I talked about it earlier on in our program. Try your library in Westland. Here's why I tell you why. They have some of the best computers around. They also probably have programs that will be able to help you in particular learn how to use a computer and to use the different. Now, Gary describes some of the things that are often on the computer as part of the operating system that can help you with your learning disabilities, et cetera. But I bet your library in Westland will be a great place for you to go. And the nice thing about this is you don't have to buy anything. You just simply go in there, find out what the day of the week is that they are open for that, and then you've got great computers there. I bet they have people there who will be able to help you use
it. And then also the school districts sometimes have after-hours classes for, as example, and you may or may not be a senior, but the seniors would be in the same thing.
Yeah.
There was a time period where a lot of seniors, it's not the case now because so many seniors are becoming internet savvy, but to introduce them to computers and how to use them and how to use the mouse and
was where I, in the late 80s, that's how I learned to use computers.
That's how you learned it. So
exactly.
There's a lot of school programs where they take advantage of the local school curriculums for teaching of that. And they also may know programs of how to get computers in your hands that are donated. So they may already have those programs in place and a donation.
So, William, here's the neat thing about it. You don't have to spend a penny on this. You just simply go to your library and check on the resources there, okay?
Yes, sir.
You know where the library is in Westland?
Yes, sir.
Good. And then check out with them.
And they may know of a program that actually will donate.
And they often have resources there to, for instance, programs to help people with learning disabilities. So try that out for us, okay? And by the way, keep in touch with us by going to Internet Advisor. Going to internetadvisor.net.
Yeah, for other people that can get online. But William, call us back next week. And
if
you're having a problem, maybe we can direct you in a different direction.
But try the library this week, William, and then let us know after that, okay? Thanks so much for giving us a call. All right, Dottie is with us in Ann Arbor. Dottie, welcome to the Internet Advisor. What can we do for you?
Hi.
Hi.
I have a fairly simple question. Well, it probably is a fairly simple question, but it's kind of confusing to me. I'm sort of new to Apple, and I wanted to know the difference. I'm in the process of moving my iPhoto library to, like, an external hard drive because I just have so many photos. And I wanted to know the difference between the iPhoto library and the regular photos, like the area where you would save your regular photos.
Well, on your Mac, you'll have two areas. One is called Pictures. Under your user ID, you'll find a folder that says Pictures. And that would be where you would just put your normal pictures at. Within that same folder will be your iPhoto library.
Mm-hmm.
And iPhoto references directly to that library. And you can import pictures from the general Pictures folder into the iPhoto library to be managed. The ones that are in the Pictures library aren't being managed. Those are like there willy-nilly for you to do what you want to do.
So you have to import. It's a good question because I have the same issue myself. Do you then import the pictures into your iPhoto library?
Correct.
Okay. So you have...
So that's what I've been importing them into the iPhoto library when I'm moving them over, but I noticed like I have like 220 gigs in my iPhoto library, and then I have like an extra 90-some in the pictures.
Yes.
Are they the same pictures, or are they like... I want to put them all on an external drive, I don't want them in like two locations.
It depends on whether you imported those other pictures into the iPhoto library. They could, in fact, be in two different places, one in the general pictures library folder and also in the iPhoto library. What I would do, if I was you, is just copy the entire pictures library onto an external drive, and that way you've got everything.
Okay.
So they're not the same. I think that's the key, Dottie. They're not the same picture.
They may not be the same.
And then going forward, I should just make sure that I'm putting them all in the regular pictures.
Yeah, you could do it that way if you're not gonna if you don't want to have them managed by iPhoto.
There's something new coming from Apple right now. It's a new piece of software called simply iPhoto.
Yeah,
no, what's it called?
They're going to take iPhoto and redo it. I forgot the branding name to it, but it's going to be a new application to manage your pictures.
And it's called iConfuse?
No kidding.
But I would.
Probably, I are confused.
Now, I would say this to you, Dottie, though, and that is when you start getting that many pictures, generally iPhoto itself has a difficult time managing those because that's a lot of pictures. And I normally say to people, when they get to that point, you want to get something like either Photoshop Elements for the Mac, which will manage it much better, or you might even want to, depending on the type of level of photographer you are, you might want to consider looking at Lightroom by Adobe as well.
Mm-hmm. And I do actually have Lightroom, I believe.
Okay. You may want to manage them through Lightroom instead.
You spent some money for that, I think.
No, Lightroom's fairly inexpensive. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, as soon as you do that, then the Lightroom keeps its own library and doesn't use the existing, so you could end up with triplicates of your phone.
Yeah, I have a fear that that's what I'm doing. So still just always, like, when I'm taking them off my camera, just always import them into, like, the pictures folder, and then that'll keep a master copy, you think?
Correct. Okay, Dottie, we're going to put you on hold, and we'll see if we can help you offline as well. I want to take a moment to salute the folks behind the glass, as we say. Thank you very much to Eric, who has been answering the phones here, and to Rich, who is the man behind the sound effects and also our engineer. Thank you guys very much for all of your help there. And to my posse here in studio, thanks. Cal, by the way, I know you're going to be gone for the rest of the month now doing some work with ice skating. It's good to have you back in the studio here.
It's always great to be here. And believe me, when I'm all done, I'm going to be really happy to be back as well because this is a great place to be.
It is. And especially right now, by the way, folks, we have time for a couple more calls. 800-859-0957. Of course, Ed Riddell and Gary Baker in studio as well. Let's go to Elizabeth, who's calling us from northern Michigan. How far north, Elizabeth?
Hello. I am have a question for you about computers.
Yes.
I need a computer.
Okay.
I need a simple, basic, first-timer computer, a lap computer, one I can use the search where I can put in a word and get some information.
Right.
One where I can send a message to my children and receive a message from them. I think that's what you're called, an internet, where you I can put in a www and get the information.
Elizabeth, can I guess?
I'm very basic. So
yeah, can I guess that this is a new field for you, right?
Totally.
That's so, you know, I'm glad you're calling because there are a lot of folks out there who are in exactly the same situation as yours. Guys, how do we help somebody who is just brand new, spanking new to this, not to get snowed under with a lot of terminology?
So the good thing is everything that she said she wanted to do, every single computer out there will do.
Yep.
Right? Yep. So now it's just a matter of, is there anything else, and how easy she wants to be able to do it, and then how much she wants to pay.
Well, there's also size because of the age and the people with their dexterity and the screen size. So a lot of laptops you buy now, it seems like less is more. A lot of people are tired of the large laptops because they weigh so much.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going smaller, but that's really for the younger generation because of the eyes. They can see that small stuff. So the best thing to do is to go into a big box store like Best Buy or even a Target or Sears still sells them, and other places, Costco, Walmart.
Elizabeth, are you near any big cities up where you are right now?
I'm 50 miles from grocery store. I can visit my daughter in a big city downstate.
Okay.
And maybe get her to help you.
Good idea, yeah.
She would.
Yeah, and the other thing is, go ahead, I was going to say tablet would be ideal.
Well, the first question is, Elizabeth, do you even own a computer now?
No.
Okay.
My husband had one, 15 years ago, and so I know that you type in things, and you have to be careful getting in and getting out.
That's okay. Okay, good. So you haven't had one, and it's been a long time since there's one around.
Of course, once again, I was going to do the same thing that you just talked about recently with another caller. Maybe she might want to go by the library and tinker with one a little bit and work with the librarian so you can get used to the computer and some of the terminologies.
Very good idea.
So that when you are ready to go and buy, you'll feel a little more comfortable doing the buying experience.
But but the computer can give you such a stigma because it has the keyboard and everything. Then that's why I think a lot of people the best thing is just go with a tablet. You can get a Samsung tablet for just $100, and it's 9 inches, and you'll be able to get to the internet, send and receive messages. It'll have a camera, so you could possibly talk to them real time with a camera.
That's right. Yep. That's Elizabeth, a good point.
But you will not be able to do dial up. So the thing is, your rural area, is there anything that has internet access in your for your home?
So, Elizabeth, what city are you near?
I know they have a computer, but they have DirecTV.
Yes, they do. They do by satellite, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, Elizabeth, what big city are you near?
Do you know Michigan?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Yes, ma'am, we do.
Oh, all right. Darn it, I don't. Anyway, I'm between, if you draw a line between Sheboygan and Alpena, I'm in the middle.
Okay,
so you're by Hammond Bay.
No, I'm on the Aquiac River.
On the Aquiac River. I used to know the people that own that. My parents live right off of the Aquiac River.
Okay, see?
Yeah. So
see that, Elizabeth?
I grew up there.
There are people here who know that area. Now, so is there a library, for instance, in Sheboygan? There would be a library.
Library.
I can go to the library.
Yeah, they can go to Roger City or Sheboygan.
I have gone there, and they set up what I tell them I want, how to make soap, and they set up something and told me, just type in how to make soap and push the...
Good. Now, Elizabeth, baby steps for you. Baby steps for you would be to either go to Sheboygan or Roger City, which are near you, to the library there. And then ask the people at the library there how, if they have classes or if there's a time that you can come in that one of the librarians can sit down and can help you. I used to, for instance, when we go to Tawa City, I would go into the library there. Mm-hmm. And many people who vacation do this. They will go into a library near them wherever they are in our beautiful state. Where they're camping in the woods, they can go into the library in whatever the city is there. And those librarians are just great people.
Yep.
And that's the first thing I would have you do. Then, when you get some idea of what you like to do and what feels comfortable for you, then get your daughter, to take you to another big city nearby. And that could be down to West Branch, it could be to Gaylord, it could be to any one of those bigger cities that has a larger store.
I can go to.
Pardon me?
I can go to Walmart in Sheboygan.
There you go. Yep. So once you have got your hands on a computer and got working around a little bit, then that's the time for you to go out.
The thing in that area, though, is really the only way to get internet access is if you have cable. Mm-hmm. It depends what rural road she's on.
Cable. Yeah. There is no cable here.
Yeah, there is no cable. Right. Yep. You're going to have to go cellular internet access. With the cell phone.
And that will be the next. That will be the next step.
Unfortunately, that's just the next.
So. Elizabeth, Ed has just brought up another thing. So it's not just a matter of getting you a computer up there, but also then...
I have a cell phone.
Good. Then through the cell phone, you'll be able to access the internet. But that's the second step, okay?
Do you have a smartphone, what they call a smartphone?
No, I could get one.
Okay. Because that's what we're going to recommend.
Mm-hmm.
And Tether, you might remember that word. That'll help them figure out what you want. Tether that phone to your tablet.
A smartphone may be all she needs. If she has good eyes and dexterity, she might be able to do everything she needs to on a smartphone. She can exchange photos. She could do. She could talk real time with video with her grandchildren and her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the smartphone may be all that she needs, really.
Well, Elizabeth,
smartphone is small. If I wanted to, like, read an article out of a magazine,
And that's true.
Yeah, okay, Elizabeth, we've given you a couple ideas here. Please stay in touch with us and talk to your daughter about it. But
and then call us back next week.
Yeah, get to that library, okay?
Okay.
All right, Elizabeth, thanks so much for giving us a call. Appreciate that. Andy, hang on the phone. We'll get to you after we close out here in just a moment, all right?
Yeah, offline.
Thank you, folks, for being with us. I love that call with Elizabeth because that's where a lot of people are who are listening to this program, wondering, how do I get into this world? And the nice thing about it is it's getting simpler and simpler. But, you know, we kind of did a commercial for libraries out there, and I'm so glad we did because they're a great free resources. Your taxes have paid for them. And they're a great place to go to get help. Folks, thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Don't forget, spring forward Sunday night. Daylight savings time is coming.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.